Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau.
So I got a chance to finally see Prometheus over the weekend.
Oh, cool. How was it?
It just came to Japan.
Yeah. Well, I kind of meant like finally, because it just finally came over. But watching the movie, it was like visually stunning, you know, everything looked great. But then, you know, thinking about it after the movie, not a lot in it made sense.
Don't say anything.
I don't know, I tend to be overly critical of movies, but
I've noticed.
I think you've said it before, Chris, though, you don't really like to have to turn off your brain to enjoy a movie, mm-hmm. You know? So watching the movie, everything was great. Some of it was kind of difficult to watch because, you know, body horror is kind of difficult to watch sometimes. But then, like, after the movie, I'm like, you know what? That was like a yarn afghan. You know, pick one spare thread and you have a pile of yarn at your feet that doesn't really make any sense. So,
lots of aliens?
Maybe
I can't say anything.
Yeah. Oh, Chris, stop.
Still, it's worth seeing for visuals.
Yeah, I'm sure it looks pretty. All of Ridley Scott's things, even if they're not that interesting.
White Squall?
Looked pretty.
Have you seen it?
No.
Busted! Oh, it's sailing, so I guess you got the sailing stuff.
I'll say this, it was good for pacing, too. Mm-hmm. We were discussing this before. It's a nicely paced movie. You know, it doesn't seem to, like, drag on, and you're given enough of the story and enough about the characters, you know, to kind of go, rather than having, like, an hour where it's just background stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I did appreciate that.
Although sometimes I really like that in a movie.
Hmm.
Or that's the best part. That's the build-up.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then the 20, 30-minute long action scene at the end I don't need.
Right.
Yeah.
I watched Avengers.
Speaking of the 20 weekend. Or 30 movie.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say that. I don't want to ruin the movie. Yeah. So, that finally came
it's
to
Avengers.
Japan.
Everybody, sorry to interrupt you, but it's Avengers. Everyone kind of knows there's going to be lots of action in it, you know.
Wow.
Hmm. Oh, all right. Sorry. Well, there will be action in it.
Yeah. It was about 20 minutes too long.
Mm-hmm.
It was worth seeing in the theater, sure.
In 3D?
No, I watched it in 2D. I refused to watch 3D again.
Yeah.
So, watch that. And during the climax.
Wow,
I was
struggling to stay awake even now. Just talking about it.
Oh, I did fall asleep during one part. Actually, it was 20 minutes too long, and there was, like...
And I was asleep for a good hour of that, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. I did fall asleep, and I still thought it was too long. No, but in Japan, you can get beer in the movie theater, so I had a beer and, a massive Coke as well. And, there was like a scene and it's like Scarlett Johansson's talking about her background with Hawkeye and I'm like, well, this is a good time to go to the bathroom now.
Sexist.
No, because I'm like, I know what it is. And then she says the one line and I'm like, knew that story was coming. Good time to go. And I went to the bathroom and didn't miss a thing. Yeah. Aerosmith. I don't want to close my eyes, but actually you could in the Avengers. Because you won't miss a thing. Sorry.
I'm just going to close my eyes.
Wake me up when the Hulk comes on. And that was the nice surprise, is Hulk was actually really good in the movie. So, you know, it's like the third incarnation of this reboot. And they really got it right.
Hmm.
Yeah. He stole every scene. Even Banner was good. Like, Mark Ruffalo as just being Banner was really good. He wasn't wasted. Robert Downey Jr. clearly had it in his contract that he had to have the most lines.
Right.
Yeah.
So he had those. Chris Evans, I think Chris Evans a good actor, and he did the most with what he got. He wasn't given very much.
Hmm.
Chris Hemsworth, Thor, well, whatever. Yeah, the
God of Thunder.
His name? Loki was a great surprise as well. Tom Hiddleston or something like that. I forget his name. But he was great. So him and the Hulk were really nice surprises.
Was it Loki planned part two? Sorry, I shouldn't ask, because that'll possibly spoil. Everybody who's listening has seen it already, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's
true. End of the freaking line here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But during the climax, I was thinking, you know, you could replace Thor, Black Widow, Nick Fury, and Hawkeye with Jack Bauer from 24.
And just to clarify, you mean one Jack Bauer.
One Jack Bauer.
Four Avengers.
And it would have been a much better movie. Like, you would have had, like, you know, Boy Scout Captain America playing against Jack Bauer. You would have had the guy, you know, Banner, oh, I don't want to turn into the Hulk. And Jack Bauer's like, well, we need you. Shock him. Turn him into the Hulk. Like, it would have been so much better. And it's just like, there was actually a couple things that were a bit strange. One is, I think something was cut out of the Black Widow story. Because every now and then there would be like this reaction shot from Scarlett Johansson and the camera would zoom in on her. Mm-hmm. So obviously they want us to catch the reaction.
And they just want us to look at her face.
Oh, yeah.
And it did zoom in on her face, right?
It did zoom in on her face.
I don't think other parts of the body can give a reaction.
Actually, they can.
All right.
Is it cold in here? But you're like, that reaction is never explained, right? So it was like...
Sequel.
Yeah, but you don't need it.
Prequel. Didn't spark my interest.
And the other thing was, there's this scene where it's all the Avengers together, and then they start acting a certain way, and I'm like thinking, oh, they're kind of acting really awkwardly, like as in they're acting. So I think they're trying to convey something, like they're maybe being mind controlled or something like that. Nope. They just were acting that awkwardly, and I'm like, wow, that was so bizarre. Like, I really did not need that long scene of that.
You sure you didn't miss something when you went to the bathroom?
No, I did not miss anything. Yeah.
Or while you were asleep?
didn't miss anything. No.
Did you go to this movie?
So yeah, definitely you could have lopped off. And then kind of like the big climax is one of those things you're like, why? Why are they doing that?
Because it's cool.
But you know what I was thinking is like enough of these like single villains with... you know, the cast of name faceless thousands.
Right.
I want a supervillain team. So the next Avengers movie's got to have a supervillain team, or just don't show it because you need as much personality. Yeah, there you go, Joss Whedon. You heard me. You need that personality on the other side, and Loki did really well. And Tom Hiddleston, well, I probably should get his name. We'll get it correct in the tags, but. He did really well, but it would be nice to have a little bit more personality on that side because there wasn't a whole lot on the other side.
You know? Well, you got an army of faceless mooks. How much personality do they have?
Avengers, like, they're so huge. And like, there's so many of them. And you're like, I love the Ultimates comics and how Hawkeye was brought in there. And that's where they've taken the Hawkeye from. But even the Hawkeye in the Ultimates wasn't humorless. And it's like, oh, let's have a humorless Hawkeye. Great. And a humorless Black Widow. Great. And they have pretty much the same skill set, except one uses a bow. Great.
And don't forget the other skill set.
Yeah, therefore, don't need them. Like, you don't need both.
You do. One has boobs, the other doesn't.
And when you got Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth.
Who also have boobs?
No, I was
trying to see the connection.
You got the pecs on the other side. You're going to need to bring in, like, Hawkeye to bring in, you know, the ladies.
Yeah, good point.
So, yeah, it was good. It could have been better.
After I bashed it for 20 minutes... You know, you take that 20 minutes that I just talked about, cut that out of the movie, and you got a good movie.
Yeah, you could have taken, yeah, those things like that Black Widow talking about how she met Hawkeye, you'd be like, don't know, don't care. It's just like that little scene where everybody's acting like pieces of wood, you're like, don't need it. But they're like, oh, we got to show how, you know, they're going to come together as a team, and it was like so awkward. It's like, oh, wow.
Awkward.
Yeah. And everybody's got to have their scene. And that was another thing that added it. Like, everybody gets their scene at the beginning.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, oh, man, just hurry up and assemble them.
Mm.
I don't think they ever say Avengers assemble.
Plot points, assemble!
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. So that was all right.
Mm. Worth the wait it took to come over here?
Maybe it was the fact that everybody was like, Avengers, best movie ever, and better than Dark Knight Rising.
Really?
That's what people were saying. Right. It's amazing. And I would actually say Iron Man was better than Avengers. Mm. The first Iron Man.
Yeah, I saw the new Batman a little while ago. I think I said it last week on the podcast. But yeah, it was good. I really enjoyed it. Though I haven't seen Avengers, it's hard to imagine that it would be better.
Mm. Yeah.
But we're watching True Blood, I think, giving an update in every episode. But it made me go back to Werewolf the Forsaken. So I think I finally hit upon what... the kind of game I'd want to run and how I would change Werewolf.
Something featuring Joe Manganiello.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking that too.
No.
Okay, so you all got to play these big muscle-bound guys.
Your scores are strength, intelligence, and pecs.
Yeah. You're cut. No, tell us more. Anyway, although I really love the World of Darkness, the new World of Darkness rule set, and prefer that over the old, I wasn't really happy with some of the plot or the meta plot that they have with the new systems. And Werewolf Forsaken was one of them. But the rules are still really tight. Mm-hmm. So they're really good. So I was thinking it's like borrowing a lot from True Blood. It's to really emphasize the pack. Mm-hmm. So those who people who don't know Werewolf Forsaken, some key factors is like what moon you were born under, new moon, half moon, full moon, and that will give you access to certain mm-hmm. gifts, they call them, certain powers. And then there's what tribe you are, and that's very similar to the vampire clans if you play that, and that gives you, of course, access to gifts, but also, and both the what moon you're under and what tribe you are kind of shape your personality, yeah. your interests and everything. Mm-hmm. As well as in true White Wolf style, who you like, who you don't like, they always put, you know, those little quotes.
I like those.
Yeah, I do like those a lot. But then, yeah, and certainly with the new additions, they're trying to get it where people can play different tribes and come together and be in part of like a lodge or a pack or something. Mm-hmm. But I really want to just emphasize the pack and that you're all born together and it's not like you can't, you were always like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you were raised together. So I was figuring that, sure, what moon you're under, that can apply to anything. And keep that, but tribe, make that more like bloodlines. Mm-hmm. So you could actually have like a pack that maybe they want to keep their bloodline really pure or only certain of these tribes are part of the pack. And then some packs actually want quite a diverse range. So they actually encourage trying to, you know, have all the bloodlines, i.e. tribes, represented in their pact. And I was talking to Wayne and he even recommended where they would even go and adopt. Like, if they're missing one because it's, you know, it hasn't appeared this generation, so they would try to adopt one that would bring the Iron Masters, for example, into their pact.
That'd be pretty sweet, like a ward, like in Game of Thrones.
Or that, but the idea is, like, less like a ward, more like a Batman and Robin ward, where he takes them over, okay. as opposed to, like, as a hostage.
Yeah. Because I imagined it almost more like a geographic location, kind of like you're moving to another city, and that's kind of like where you're going to stay, like... Because the thing in, like, Game of Thrones, the wards kind of understood that eventually they will go back, you know, unless they're a hostage.
Yeah.
But here it's kind of like, no, and now you live here, you know.
Yeah.
I always imagined, like, the vampires would have the cities where the werewolves would kind of had the areas in between. I don't know. I know it's cliche nowadays with all the, it showing up in all different kinds of media, but I really like the vampire versus werewolf kind of dichotomy.
One of the reasons why I wanted to, like, reemphasize the pack, because... In my mind, there's this image. People have seen the TV series Prophet. Well, no, when I say Jim Prophet, but kind of like this sociopathic corporate guy. But I actually have him like, I think we talked about this in maybe the Animals episode, where, you know, have like these werewolves in the corporate boardroom. Hmm. So he's kind of like that, but I just like imagine him, you know, coming from Wall Street to his pack, where there's a mix of like more rural werewolves, and they kind of see him as the outsider, but they know... Like, he's Pack, so he's their brother, you know? Mm-hmm. But he also brings a particular skill set.
And style set.
Yeah, and style set to the table. So they know he strengthens the Pack. But there's still that internal rivalry or animosity because he is so different. And it is like, you know, you could have, like, country werewolves and city werewolves, definitely.
Yeah, the retelling of the classic fairy tale.
Like, True Blood's really good, but they definitely emphasize that the werewolves are all, like, bikers or... They all drive pickup trucks. The werewolves that we've seen.
Well, I was also going to say, that could also be because sort of the story is focused on that rural part of the country.
Yeah, the werewolves that we've seen. So what about like a New York pack or a Washington, D.C. pack?
They're fabulous.
They're fabulous. So that's what I would want to do, to do that. Wayne recommended setting it in Miami or near there.
Well, because I was thinking it's right next to the Everglades. So there you got like these... thick mangrove swamps and like sawgrass plains, and it's kind of like, you know, you could do backwater kind of rural stuff, and then you have Miami right there.
So. Yeah. Well, surprising a lot of cities have a lot of rural stuff right next to it. Anyway, that's what I want to do for Werewolf the Forsaken.
Yeah, I totally dropped the whole spirit thing too.
Yeah, I'd really want to emphasize, I don't know if I'd want to completely drop it, because some of the gifts and the, like, especially the moons, what moon you're under, auspices, I think it's called. They really emphasize, like, there's some ones where they're kind of like the shamans or the spirit, whatever.
Yeah. Well,
but the other element I want to introduce, and again, borrowing from True Blood, and this is from the vampires, is the religion. And And I really like how, you know, some come from wolves and some come from humans. Mm-hmm. And then they're werewolves. I really like that, especially like that in Apocalypse. And they really played that up in the first version of Werewolf. And have it where kind of the approved religion among the werewolves is that werewolves are kind of like the guardians of humans and wolves. But really, unofficially, people kind of divide, and usually based on where they've kind of come from, where some would think that, no, we're just here for the humans. Others think we're just here for the wolves. And there's kind of that kind of rivalry. And then there's ones that are even more extreme, and they're just like, no, we're just here for ourselves.
Yeah.
We're the top predators.
Would that be like extreme form of like wolf kind of?
Yeah. And it's just like, we are the alpha wolves of the world.
Yeah, I think that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm getting pretty excited about that. I don't know how they're going to interact with vampires just yet, but certainly want to make it like a cast of thousands of the spirit, supernatural
world. Yeah, that kind of gets messy.
Yeah, but really, really kind of gritty and really bridge the urban and the rural. That'll give it some more planning. Maybe set it in a prison. Because today we're going to talk about prisons. So it's our second. Gosh, if we ended on Avengers, we wouldn't have been able to. Prometheus? Could we have done prisons? No. All right. So we're doing the second installment of our locales series. And this is, we're going to focus on prisons. And we had a lot of discussion on what is a prison. So are we going to do prison of the mind, a la Matrix? And we decided no, because that's a bit of a cheat.
I believe you've toned down your opinion since our discussion. So I'm very calm.
A bit of a cheat.
I believe the answer was no!
Yeah. Well, how about this one? No!
We also don't want to talk about worlds that maybe you can't escape. Probably not the best example, but like Wonderland.
Right.
You know, Alice tumbles through the rabbit hole, ends up in Wonderland, or Dorothy and Oz, and how do I escape this place? Yeah, you could say, well, that's kind of a prison, but no, we're not going to consider that.
Well, it's kind of like the Matrix, little bit, where I think our definition of prison was you kind of, the location has to restrain your physical movement and your freedom, where in all those examples, like the Matrix, Alice in Wonderland, and Dorothy, they're not really physically restrained. And I don't mean you have to be, like, in shackles, but they have the whole world they can move around in.
I think the definition is, you know, when we just said prisons at the beginning, and that first thing that flashed to your mind? Yeah, that. That's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, pretty much.
So like ships, we're going to divide it into prisons as a location and prisons as a character, with a little added thing where we're also going to talk about the type of characters that you would find in a prison. So with locations, we'll also talk about the type of stories that you'll find in a prison, and some of them specific to the different locations. The different types of prisons. All right, so the first one we'll go with the classic prison. And by classic, we mean, you know, if you watch Prison Break, you're looking at Fox River or Shawshank Redemption, or really just if you live near a prison, go look out the window. That.
So. Eastern State Penitentiary, right smack in Philadelphia.
In the city?
In the city.
Yeah, we had one in Chicago as well. I remember walking home from school and seeing, like, arms hanging out between the barred windows.
I think the most famous one in Canada is Kingston Penitentiary.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Sorry.
Are we going to dispute that?
No. I was going to say Eastern State's a little different. It was not active, but the building is still there.
Oh, okay.
So it's like watching Session 9, I'm like, I bet you that's what the inside of Eastern State looks like.
Huh. Now, the one in Chicago is still active. I mean, it's literally, it looks like any other office building except there's prisoners inside.
Is it a prison or a jail?
Actually, you know, I think it is a jail, but it's still a large building, but it's right there in the center of the city.
Oh, I'll have to put pictures on the form because Eastern State looks like a castle.
Huh, that's cool.
They do haunted house tours there on Halloween.
Oh, cool. Well, that's pretty good.
That,
yeah.
I imagine, would be freaky.
Yeah.
My brother said it was pretty spooky.
I can imagine, yeah. So, yeah, that's what we're going to focus on. So why would a classic prison be a good place to set your game?
Well, the classic prison, especially modern ones, there's so many different kinds of avenues for stories and adventures to play with. Because you are restricted. You have kind of your cell, but you're not alone with it. You have your cellmate or cellmates, so that can be other members of the party or NPCs that you have to work with, but there is some free time as well. You can go outside in the yard and just be around with lots of other people, so you can talk plans or politics or you know,
get shanked.
Get shanked, yeah. And actually, that's part of it too. You know, there's in modern day prisons, especially in the U.S., there's a lot of gang troubles there. So being locked up doesn't by any means mean that it's a safe place. Quite the opposite, in fact. So yeah, there's so many different kinds of storylines, but it's interesting because you always have to be, you're always being watched. You always have to keep things under wraps. You know, when you're outside in the world and you're doing something illegitimate or sneaky, you know, as long as nobody sees you, you'll be okay. But there's not people actively watching you. In the prison, you have to do everything serendipitously. So there's a lot of tension that can be built into it like that.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of control over your, just your routine. So everything is like down to the minute. So it gives the game master a lot of power, I think, in that kind of setting.
It's actually one thing that you have to be a little bit careful of, too. I did a prison break with the steampunk game a little while ago, and one of the things that was really necessary is to actually have that regiment written out, like what time do the guards go here, what time are the shift changes, and also what time do the prisoners go out in the yard, what time do they get back in their cells. As you say, it's planned down to the minute, so you have to have that plan. It's quite important.
You have to have the plan, or is you have the game master have to put in certain flaws in your routine or schedule so that the players can spot them?
Actually, though, what I was doing with that one, I was trying it out. It worked fairly well, where when the players tried to do something that was involved in a skill contest of some type, like a sneaking or like doing a spot check out of a window or whatnot, if they rolled extremely well over a certain amount, it was Savage Worlds, so if they aced the roll, then I allowed them to inject some kind of minor flaw into the prison system. For example, one guy was trying to distract a guard while he was digging, and he rolled really well, so I let him give the guard a limp or something that, like, he went away for a smoke break every time he was on duty.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah, it worked pretty well.
Things like Fate with its aspects would be good with that. You know, you could give the guy a weak bladder.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I think...
Or tiny bladder.
Yeah, you'd make a terrible guard, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
No, I think if you're setting your story in a prison, this is one of the settings where the GM not has to be flexible, but if you plan everything down to the minute, like the schedule and... I mean, it's a prison, so people are... It's built so that, obviously, people don't escape. But if you are running a prison break story and... You're the game master. You can make anything happen. If you make it impossible to escape, that's going to be a pretty boring story. You know, so I think this is one of the cases where the GM has to really be a fan of the players. Like, if they come up with a creative idea during the game, you have to say, don't be me, and say, no, that's not going to work.
Right.
You know, allow it to work. Just because they came up with something creative, because you could just say, no, there's guards there 24/7, and great. So what happens? Nothing. We don't escape.
Yeah, yes-anding is very important in this kind of a game.
So, I mean, this was something that we were debating before the episode. So I'd like to take a little
detour
right now and kind of establish, is this the only story that we can tell in a prison? Is at some point in the story, they need to try to escape from this prison, or do you think you can have a satisfying game just only in the prison? They'll never escape, but they're going to be telling different types of stories.
Well, I'm of the opinion that, yes, you can have a game entirely based within a prison, because I think that there's prisons... I think the prison culture is pretty interesting. You have all these different kind of groups inside there, the different kinds of gangs. You have, for example, like a gangster disciple gang made up of mostly of African Americans versus like a white supremacy group, both contained inside this tight, cramped little quarters. So there's a different kind of personalities. There's guards who can be bribed, guards who can't be bribed. You've got snitches. You've got, like your black marketeers who are sneaking things in and out. I think the possibilities for a political game are fantastic. That said, though, as a small caveat, I don't think you could make a very long game out of it, like a campaign, but, for a few sessions, maybe even like a 10-session game or so, I think it would be a lot of fun.
Okay, out of curiosity, what would happen at the end of that 10-session game?
That's what I was thinking.
That's a good question.
They would escape.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
or become king of the prison.
I'm going to say no. For me personally, no. I don't think you can really play a game inside a prison where escape is not the end goal. Because I kind of equated it to, like, The Road, right? When we were doing the Apocalypse World episode, right?
Yeah.
You watch that movie or you read that book, and sorry if I'm spoiling anything, there is no hope in that story.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a great story to read, it's a great movie to watch, but as you said, Lyle, I don't think I would want to play that game. Because why am I even trying if there's not even the possibility that this might end positively?
Yeah.
And I kind of feel the same way about a prison. Like, yeah, there's all this interesting stuff that can happen in the prison. There's all these characters you can interact with. But if I know that my character will not escape, why am I continuing to play?
Well, if your prison, your character's prison experience is all part of a bigger game where there's somewhere or something to escape to, then absolutely, there, it would seem pretty bleak otherwise. But if you, if the game itself was, you know, hey guys, we're gonna play a prison game, why would you need the carrot of an escape? Set it up as a sandbox situation. Here you are, this is your situation, do what you can. If you want to make escape part of your plans, great. If you want to, say, take over the biggest, baddest gang in the prison, that's fine. Or if your players want a darker experience, maybe try and survive.
I understand what you're saying. I think it's like a lot of those stories you could actually tell outside of the prison.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want to take over a gang, you could do that in the city. Because I think, in any prison story, I think it's got to be suffocating.
Mm.
Like, the routine and the confinement should chafe at the players.
Mm-hmm.
And the players shouldn't resign themselves to the fact that they're stuck there. I think in real life, somebody sentenced to life imprisonment, they kind of resign themselves to that. And there's a lot of things that they're going to change about themselves
mm-hmm.
to kind of survive and kind of deal with that situation. And I think that can be quite bleak.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to go get my high school equivalency. Yeah, that's a little success, you know. Things like that. I mean,
yeah.
It might be too mundane. I think you can kind of exaggerate the gangs, you can exaggerate the confinements and exaggerate the crushing routine to try to get the players to try to break out of that system, you know.
Yeah, or try to break the system.
Yeah.
Itself. But, you know, as far as...
Why would you want to be king of the gang in a prison game? What are you going to get out of that?
The way I envision it is as a sandbox kind of campaign, because I think that the aspects of a prison setting are interesting and unique enough on their own that it could be an interesting experience for players to kind of just jump into and see what happens. And I do see it as a political game, because there would be violence, of course, as with anything, but I don't think there'd be as much violence as, say, in a fantasy game, you know, where you're Monster of the Week.
I think I'd disagree. I think it could be, depending on what kind of prison you go to, I think there could be just as much violence.
Yeah, you have a good point, true.
Well, I guess the murder, even if you watch a series like Oz, although the body count does pile up in that TV series, but I think, yeah, there's only so many people you can kill before you're like, well, I think...
Fair enough. I guess this kind of gets into a discussion of, is it more horrific to, like, kill someone or just, like, enact violence that doesn't kill them for a long, long time?
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at, like, for example, The Watchmen, and Rorschach gets put into the prison, and then everybody's like, we've got you. And then he's, I'm not locked up in here with you. You're locked up in here with me. Like, that kind of cool stuff. But imagine, like, somebody like the hero getting put in with all the people, the villains and that, you know. Well, you can even do a fantasy, like the dungeon, like a classic dungeon. You're now put into this dungeon with a bunch of, like, orc prisoners and that. And they're like, payback time. And you're like, no, it's not. But I think... instead of like that never-ending battle and conflict, the idea is that you get out. Maybe you make friends with these orcs, and you all like say, "Let's escape these salt mines."
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a very viable goal, and I think that's something that players would probably go straight for. You know, in the real life, people, it's not easy to break out of prison, so people wouldn't try it as much. But in a game, absolutely, that's something the characters would probably go straight for. And again, all power to them. You know, that's a great goal, but. I'm not thinking of, I'm thinking of like a sandbox kind of situation where here you are, here is the prison, have fun. Also, one more thing I wanted to say was, I was thinking about it earlier, I think a prison game would make a really great game for Skype, or for people with really busy schedules like us, because the routine in that allows people to drop in and out of sessions pretty easily, if you have people with busy schedules who can't make it to every session.
I'm not sure I follow the dropping.
I think what he means is like your day in a prison, your day is regimented. So player X is not here because it's his time in the yard.
Yeah, it's his laundry time where everybody else meets in the yard.
Which could work, but
you could do that in a regular game.
It kind of goes against it a little bit because if your daily routine is like set in stone, the same things happen on some kind of set schedule.
Yeah.
Unless that person is kind of unavailable at like a regular schedule as well. It's not really going to make sense. It's like, well, hold on, wasn't Wednesday his time in the yard, and now it's Friday, you know?
I think the busy thing really, because you could do that in a regular game if there's a natural break to each session.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and a natural break, not only the story stops, but the story pauses and then the players separate.
Yeah.
And then they come back together for every session, kind of like the actual characters separate. And then at the next session, when that starts, they come together and do whatever. And then at the end of that session, they separate. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is like when they don't separate at the end of the session.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess in a prison, if you can time it where it's like, all right, everybody back to your cells, separate, end of session. But I think it suffers the same problem as any game. Maybe the game pauses, but everybody's kind of together.
Right.
And then it starts up again and it goes, where are these two guys? I'm like, well,
that's a good point. Well, what I was thinking of for it, and I don't want to get too off topic, but when we were playing Monster Hearts recently, I was thinking that a high school game is really good for a game with busy players because the lives of high school students are really, really regimented. You've got to bow to your parents and to the schools and everything. So it's really easy to find an excuse for why a player wouldn't be there. And I think that jail is kind of the same lines. But you have a very good point, Lyle. If you can't have a continuous story if people just disappear.
Dude, how free are our lives now? It's
not.
All lies, kids.
Not.
Become an adult, even more regimented.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe boss are going to take off for a while. Oh, yeah, sure, why not?
Just the excuses that the characters would have.
You're able to take time off, though.
No.
No, you are. There's just a consequence we're doing, though, that being homeless and
broke. It's called divorce.
Yeah, or divorce.
You know, but I was thinking, I actually, even though I am on the, you know, make it a prison break story, mm-hmm. I do think there's a certain type of story that you could tell where it isn't all about escape. Although, escape would add a nice element, and that's the prison battalion. You know, like your Dirty Dozen.
Mm-hmm. Where prison is your home.
Well, it's like, they get like the battalion together and they get them like out of like the military prison, and that
right.
BattleTech, the Draconis Coastline, has the Legion of Vega. And they're misfits, but I kind of envisioned where they could also be people that were in the military prison or even like the ghost regiments where they come from the Yakuza. But again, you could set it where maybe one of the regiments is a bunch of guys that are from a prison.
Right. Or what did they do for Marvel Civil War? Because I know the bad guys actually, the U.S. government kind of allows some of them to form a team. What are they called? The Thunderbolts?
DC Comics did it ages ago with like the Suicide Squad.
Hmm.
And that was super villains that would go out on these missions. And I think that's pretty cool.
It's kind of
because then you can play the anti-hero or not even the anti-hero. You're playing a villain who's doing good things.
Yeah. Relatively.
Relatively. Or you could play heroes doing bad things because you've been in that type of prison.
Mm. Or I was thinking that kind of gives you the best of both worlds. Because, I mean, if you do that kind of like supervillain team or they kind of any team recruited from prison, I imagine you would get to do stuff outside the prison.
Yeah.
You know, but then it's like, okay, you're done. And now back you go. So you could mix up the sessions between missions outside of the prison and still have that political stuff going on inside the prison and survival there. So I think that would be kind of interesting. And then maybe that, but I think the end goal of that would probably still be escape, not in the, we're going to dig a tunnel and escape kind of idea, but eventually we're going to work off whatever sense we have on these missions and then not have to do this anymore kind of escape.
That actually would be pretty cool in that, again, this actually gets into the last episode, our mercenaries or Condottieri. Sorry, when I didn't have it in front of me, it's tough to. Man, I no matter how many times I wrote that, I always have to like look it up again to write it. Anyway, where we talk about where you can choose your contracts as a mercenary company or a free company, and there, going with what you're saying there, Wayne, is like, it's almost like if you do these certain type of mission. I don't know if you'd want to give the players a choice. It's kind of breaking reality a bit, giving them a choice. But it might be kind of fun as, like, the government or whoever is like, you can actually choose your missions. And it's, like, how dangerous they are. It's how much time you can work off your sentence.
That's one of those things, like, I think with, like, Monster Hearts and Apocalypse World, they say, even though you're making mechanical choices as a game master, try to make them seem as if they flow from the fiction.
Yeah.
So you could actually be, as the game master, presenting the character with the choice of, okay, what mission do you want to do?
Yeah.
We're giving you this choice here. But if you could work it into the fiction where, like, the people offering them the missions kind of play good cop, bad cop, yeah. and it's kind of like, okay, well, if you cave, you know, if you role play one way, you're going to get this mission.
Yeah.
But if you role play another way and kind of, you know, stick up for yourself, you're going to get this one.
Yeah.
So it's, you're still giving them a choice. It's just a bit more of a fictional one rather than just laying them all and saying, pick one.
Right.
You know? So.
Now, with a classic prison, I mean, you really got to think about the environment. And more so than probably a lot of other things, in that the hallways or the cells, the corridors, all of
the showers.
The showers. Yeah, you never have to think of the showers in other games. Now I have to think about
them. Not because your players are thinking about them all the time.
Well, you know, it's the two big things, the door and the window. Like, you have to describe that door to their cell to a T, because the players will ask every single conceivable question. How big is the gap under the door? What kind of lock is there? How far can I reach out of it?
None. A good one. And you can't. Boom. Done.
There you go. That's a Wayne game.
Yeah. But I mean, it really helps to set the tone. If you want to make it really brand spanking new, I mean, that can convey the sense of power and the fact that maybe it's even more, you know, inescapable, but it's almost nicer, cleaner. Or it can be very gloomy and peeling in that. Maybe it's easier to break out of, but you're going to feel gloomy and depressed.
No, I think about like Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
You know, I imagine that place looks terrible on the inside.
I don't even think it has walls. But, escape.
Yeah, I was going to say, it also kind of...
Oh, locks.
Oh. Yeah, really.
I forgot something.
Wait, who put in these revolving doors? But
they just like open as soon as you get like... automatic doors.
Yeah. I was going to say, that made me think of the actual physical structure itself would play into it a lot. Mm-hmm. Also, now I think the well, not the mentality, but the way prisons are run is pretty standardized. But kind of like part of the reason why I brought up Eastern State Penitentiary is when that was built, it was a different kind of prison in the way it was run. Prisons up until that part in the States were... We're not going to be able to rehabilitate these people. Let's just contain them.
Mm-hmm.
Where Eastern State Penitentiary was built with Quaker ideals, where everyone had their own individual cell. And the idea was, no, through solitude and sort of introspection and solitary confinement, we will eventually be able to sort of reform these people. Maybe not put them back on the street, but there's more to just keeping them caged like an animal. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think we have that. Now, I imagine all prisons are kind of standard, but
yeah.
If you're playing a historical game, how the prison is run would play into kind of the type of stories you tell and the things you can do in the prison as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking, like, the less you have to work with, the more you have to work with it.
Hmm.
So, the less you have, but even what you're saying there is, like, you got your cells. How many people are in that cell? That's really important. Is it solitary confinement? So... That's pretty much going to be when they go back to their cell, the game is probably going to stop. If you're playing with a group, if you're playing one-on-one, of course, it doesn't have to stop. But then it still wouldn't be terribly exciting as they talk to themselves or write a letter. Yeah, you almost done that letter? You want the mail? But then once you start, you add a roommate or a cellmate, sorry. Roommate. Yeah, like college.
the like, real world.
Cellmate, then it's... You know, you got that one, that dynamic. Or you have, you know, where they put like 20 people, 30 people. And what kind of cell is that going to be? Mm. And is that where they just throw the food in a trough? Yeah. And then you fight. And, you know, I was thinking like Battlefield Earth of all things. But,
yeah.
But even like those little decisions that you make actually completely change the type of game it's going to be and what happens. That if it's a group cell, the player never gets a break.
Mm.
The character never gets a break.
Or the player, too. You never get a break.
Yeah.
Well, that was a big decision with the last one. Is if I separate them out, how exactly are they going to discuss plans on how to get out?
Well, I think that could be kind of interesting. Like, yeah, sometimes you do have to kind of, I guess, bend reality a little bit. But, again, you can adapt it for the type of game you're playing. But, like, in real life, like I keep bringing up, Eastern State Penitentiary, people eventually... figured out how to do like Morse code or send messages to each other through the pipes and the heating ducts that went through their cell. So even though they were in solitary confinement, they could still kind of communicate eventually with the people who were next to them.
Yeah. Did you guys ever read The Count of Monte Cristo?
Yeah. Love that book.
Yeah. So he communicates through that little hole in the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you could do it where you break, and then the players, you know, go think of what your plan is, mm-hmm. and then think of how you're going to communicate that plan when you're in the yard the next mm-hmm. time you see the guy.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun, yeah.
Oh, and we've been a little remiss not mentioning this. Of course, there's the break-in, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Prison break-in. So you can break someone out.
Yeah. Leverage did in season 4.
Yeah.
Beginning of season 4, Leverage did a one on that. And I think that would kind of be an interesting story, but you kind of had to bend reality. Like, they smuggled in an earbud so that even though the party was physically separated, the party wasn't actually separated.
Well, that'd be tough to smuggle in, because they'd look everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I guess it would kind of, like, be a fan of the players, you know, and yeah, I guess it works. You know, the guards don't find it, because I don't really want to run two separate games, which is what I'd be doing.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
All right, so that's the classic prison, and a little bit different than ships. All right, so the next type of prison is the island prison. And of course, you can think of from the real world, you're looking at Alcatraz or Devil's Island or Manhattan in Escape from New York. So why would an island prison be an exciting place to set your game?
Well, I think kind of like what Chris said about like all the political stuff that would happen in like a classic prison. That's kind of, at least for me, I think would be magnified on an island prison. You know, because you have more space to move around. So, I don't know, I think, and I could be way off base here, but like, you put a lot of people together in a small space, and yeah, there's gonna, like, tensions are gonna mount high, but it's also gonna be curbed a little bit, I think, because it's just kind of like mob mentality, right? There's a lot of people there to kind of oppose you, mm-hmm. and a lot of people to see what's going on, just because there's a lot of people there. But if you spread them out, I think there's A, more you can do, and there's a lot more opportunity for things to happen kind of under the radar that mm-hmm. other people don't know about. So
yeah, I think it also makes the escape more grandiose as well as more difficult. Because with a regular prison, the focus is on getting out, and then you just start running. But with these, there's not only getting out, but there's getting to shore or wherever.
Yeah, I think that's true. Because I think even in an island prison, you can conceivably make a life for yourself, but you should still try to escape. But you have now more to play with in that if you do it like Devil's Island or something like that, you can actually add like flora and fauna, like a natural environment as opposed to a completely man-made environment.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it like Escape from New York, you have like a city to play with. So imagine if you were running like your typical vampire game, and a lot of times you just play in the city. Mm-hmm. But then once you say it's a prison, then the city becomes something to use as a tool to facilitate your escape. And how would you do that, you know?
Well, I was actually thinking about this before the episode, just, you know, just kind of thinking it over. And I'm glad you mentioned vampires, because at least in the World of Darkness, like, the city is the prison, because there's food there, essentially, right? All these people.
Oh.
And because of sunlight, vampires can only get so far.
Well, unless they have a car.
Well, but what I'm saying is...
Oh, foiled.
Yeah, no, literally foiled, because you just put tin foil in your car, right?
Yeah, but, we got that.
All right. Maybe the listeners didn't, all right? I kind of like it. It's almost like a prison escape where you can't just stroll out, right? You have to plan to leave the city.
That's just like life, dude.
All right.
It's like we're trapped in our lives. You know, we got food.
I thought that's specifically why we said it's not a prison of the mind for this episode, you know?
It's like the Matrix, man. You know, all right.
It's like it all philosophical here.
Well, not to get too far ahead, but something like Escape from New York, isn't that the same as kind of like a prison planet that we were talking before? It really is more like an apocalyptic scenario than it is a prison, because there's no guards there.
Well, no, but here's the difference, right? You know, like a classic prison, you get outside the walls, you're back to normal society, right? Prison island, you get off the island, it's assumed there will be normal society within reach. Prison planet, it's just a larger scale, right? Like, mm-hmm. you have to get off planet. So, I guess in a way it's similar.
All right, well, since we've cut ahead, our third prison is prison planet.
Oh! What a surprise!
Yeah. Chris busting the agenda again.
Sorry.
Just like
I said, I don't
need
to get too far ahead.
Agenda break!
I don't mean to get too far ahead. I think, and also a key difference, and you see this in a movie like Chronicles of Riddick, is that you can really play with the environment. And you know, like Star Wars, you know, you have the desert planet, the ice planet.
The jungle moon.
Yeah. Yeah, Jungle Moon is more like Devil's Island for me, but, you know, you can have, like, a really, really extreme environment, mm-hmm. and that's your planet. Just like in Chronicles of Riddick, what is it, Crematoria? Mm-hmm. Where it's like the sun just, like, you know, scorches the whole surface, so that was definitely, you know, really played with the time and, you know, a little race, not to ruin the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's a key difference between the island and the prison planet. And I think if you're going to have a prison planet, really play with an extreme environment. And I know you can do that with classic prison, or you can do that even in an island prison. Like, there's the movie Detox, which mm-hmm. is actually Rehabilitation Center, but it's a Sylvester Stallone movie. It's actually not bad. It was panned, but it's okay. But it's up north, or maybe it's in Montana or something. Anyway, it's surrounded by extreme winter weather. So it does kind of isolate that as it would like an island or a prison planet. But I think that's a distinction. And we're also talking about, I guess, how degraded the planet gets. So you maybe, when you think like a prison island is only going to be a couple steps, but I guess it could be several steps behind regular society or beneath regular society as far as like tech level and everything.
Well, it also kind of depends on, for lack of a better word, like the government, like the outside government, right? Like, prison island, it's more difficult to ignore than a prison planet, arguably, right? Because it's kind of right there. And unless the government is sending just people to the island to die, they're going to make sure they have, like, food.
Well, you could have, like, a radioactive prison planet, but it'd be tough to have, like, a radioactive prison island.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, like, that's why I think usually prison planets are on, like, the edge of the galaxy, right? Or some place that's out of the way, where people just get sent there and then they're forgotten about, you know? And
like Australia.
Yeah, like Australia, yeah. Like, sometimes they don't even send supplies. You wouldn't even have to send supplies over there. It's just not whatever they got on the planet, they're going to have to make do. And, yeah, that's it. So, well, speaking of sending supplies out to a prison planet, provided you would do that, you actually have to, like, transport the people there. Which kind of opens up the idea, at least in sci-fi settings, of like a prison ship.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
sorry, and in another setting, what you wouldn't have a prison planet.
All right, smart guy.
It's like in a modern setting, it's a prison planet, but we don't know about it because we're playing a modern setting.
Like, you can't actually have a prison ship in a historical setting, right? I don't think it would be as interesting though, because you spend the whole time like shackled.
Yeah, and floating.
Yeah, but now if you did like a prison ship in like a sci-fi kind of setting. Of course, you would have to wrangle something like a mutiny, or if it's like an advanced setting, then it would just be like a prison out in space, and the inmates would be expected to have to like get exercise, you know, and would be given some kind of basic decency, at least.
You know, just thinking about it now, Wayne, actually, I think that's a really cool suggestion, because that you have your prison breakout as kind of the default story for a prison game, but with a prison ship, you don't want to get out, obviously, because there's, you know, a vacuum outside.
Yeah,
but
we're in the airlock. Yeah, no suits. Oh, God.
But actually, it is. It's taking over the ship.
Yeah, but that's escape.
And I think it's kind of a whole new take on the whole prison escape, where it's not a plan of an escape. It's a plan on conquest.
To escape.
Conquest to escape.
What? Are you sure you'd want to escape? Maybe you take the ship as your new ship in your pirate fleet or something. Right. Like that.
Yeah, but you would have escaped.
I know what Lyle's saying. The idea is you have escaped your incarceration and now you just own the ship. You know, you can go anywhere.
Oh, semantics. How much fun.
It's not semantics at all. Like, you're like, let's go back to our cells every night? No.
We're driving in a car. I want to A, get out of the car, or B, start driving the car. These are the same? No!
I imagine the prison ship would be much bigger than a car, all right?
Imagine you're in the trunk of a car versus being in the driver's seat of the car.
Getting out of the trunk and taking over the wheel of the car are two different things.
You know, I bet you if you got into the driver's seat of that car, you would count that as escaping. Escaping the trunk of the car.
I count it as winning.
All right.
Anyway.
Cool.
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 What is this? Yeah.
I believe Chris thinks he escaped that conversation, because escape and victory are the same thing for him.
I look at it as winning.
Yeah, winning?
Winning what?
Anyway, I was going to say, there was a game I picked up on DriveThruRPG called Abandon All Hope, which
had like a pirate game.
No, it was that premise. It was a sci-fi setting where you're an inmate on a giant prison ship being shuttled off somewhere, and it's essentially that meets Event Horizon. Because something weird happens on the ship and, you know, some alternate reality bleeds over.
What system?
Its own. And what I was going to say, it sounds like a really cool setting and a really cool setup. I wasn't that impressed with the system
They give you like little schematics of the prison ship?
It did.
Well, I can use that.
Yeah. There's definitely usable stuff in there. I would just play it in the system of your choice.
Right. Also, with the prison ship, you could have it crash land somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And hopefully some people survive.
All right. You guys ready to play a game? You're all dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think with both the prison planet, especially, but also, I guess, an island prison, it can give you a break in the game or a different gear, definitely, in that you can really drop the tech level. So we were talking about before where, especially the prison planet, can be almost like a post-apocalyptic game for a while. But there is an escape. When they escape that, and they can go to like a really high-tech world. So they were battling, duking it out with
bows and arrows
and baseball bats with nails through them. And then once they escape, they're back in a modern setting. But of course, if you watch Escape from New York, you can see how you can do that with an island prison as well. Mm-hmm. They don't have access to modern weaponry or modern medicine or facilities, so they regress. And I think that can be quite fun for the players to try that out, and it gives them a different, different type of story.
Yeah.
I actually think, thinking about that in Escape, I think there's kind of a progression between classic prison, prison island, and prison planet. You kind of go up that scale, and the GM has to be even more a fan of the players, right? Because classic prison, you're doing the guard schedule at the facility. Prison island, now you're like, great, how are they going to get off? Maybe boats, maybe there's a shuttle. Prison planet, if the GM just says, nope, ships just come and dump things off from orbit, and that's it. Well, then the players are screwed, right? There's no way they're getting off there. So you have to be even that much more of a fan, and if your story is eventually they're going to get off this, you really have to provide that, or at least some kind of hook that they can latch on to get the ball rolling, because otherwise they're just going to be stuck on that planet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they can build a spacecraft from coconuts and bamboo.
Yeah, I was watching this movie, Soldier, and I don't believe it was a prison planet. It's been a while since I watched it.
Is that the Kurt Russell one?
Yeah, it's Kurt Russell, yeah.
Yeah.
It was all right. It wasn't great.
I think it was famous because he only said like 12 words in the whole movie.
Yeah, that was his character.
Silent.
And, yeah, I don't know why he couldn't speak. He didn't
want to.
Yeah,
he's raised to be the perfect soldier, which I guess doesn't include talking. He was the strong, silent, wooden type.
But they would have it where it was like a garbage planet, and they dumped all this garbage on them. So you could have... That would be pretty cool. I mean, it's both a prison planet and a garbage dump, like the Empire or whatever's garbage dump. So not only are the prison ships dumping soldiers off or prisoners off, they're also dumping like garbage. So it'd be cool to kind of unusual treasure trove for them to go, try to get stuff.
Yeah.
But
even doing that.
But then it also gives them another.
Yeah, that's another opportunity for escape. Yeah, okay, we got to do something where we can get on one of these garbage.
You make a weapon. Of course, if it's from orbit, it'd be really difficult. But if they kind of hover and dump, as long as you get you can knock that ship down. We get a garbage truck down.
Yeah. It's still going to be a pretty evil DM. Nope, everything just gets dropped off from orbit.
Yeah.
Great. We're never getting off.
So don't do that.
Yeah.
I guess if you're on a prison planet, if they're really liking the post-apocalyptic kind of thing, or digging through the garbage, then I guess you could, or the extreme environments, you could kind of set a pretty long game there. I guess I don't know if this is a rule of thumb that you can apply to all games, but the bigger the space, the longer the game. So you could spend a lot of time before they actually try to escape.
Yeah, or if you wanted, I think with like the prison planet or prison island, any of them, it allows you, the GM, I don't know, because sometimes like the bigger the plans are, the more difficult it can be to actually start it,
Right.
So like maybe the players, the players would like their characters to get off the prison planet or off the prison island, but it's just too big of a problem for them to tackle. They don't really know where to start.
Yeah.
But the influx of prisoners, I think, would be a really good way for the GM to provide those hooks. Great. Someone gets dropped off on the prison planet and they're determined to get off, they can sort of help motivate the player characters, at least give them ideas, the start of ideas. And it is still coming from the GM, but it won't seem as direct.
Or you could have somebody who was framed or set up, like somebody with a lot of political power. So if they can get them off and get them back to their allies, then that would be quite a boon for them.
I mean, one of the cool things about prisons is that you can have pretty much anybody from any walk of life is there, and they're stuck in the same situation at the same level as the players are. You can have a rich guy who was framed right next to, you know, just a bum who, I don't know, was pickpocketing. That's why he got thrown in.
I don't know.
Well,
real
life has taught us that's not true.
Yeah, I was going to say, I imagine there's a blue collar, like, planet, and then a white collar prison planet.
Yeah.
You know?
Steal $100 from a liquor store versus, you know, stealing $1 billion from a bunch of investors.
Guess one who gets the worst prison.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes,
But I think, you know, if we're, you know, we're making up entire planets, you have a bit of leeway to populate with whatever you want.
I imagine, what's this? This is the white collar crime planet called Utopia 3.
Yeah. It's also the government planet.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That would be pretty cool. You can, if you have an aristocracy in your campaign, you can have like a noble who gets thrown in prison. So that would be pretty cool.
This is kind of a way to provide them with equipment too. To a reasonable degree, you know.
Would they take all the clothes off the noble?
No. I meant like,
earrings.
If the person who gets sent to the planet is really influential or has a lot of money, well, then it's maybe perhaps a bit more reasonable that they smuggled something in.
Right.
Or they have contacts to the outside, and maybe they have like some kind of communicator where the player's characters wouldn't have had that before.
Right.
You know, at least kind of get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
It's like what we talked about in the Black Marketeers episode a little while back. You know, there's definitely people in a prison whose job it is to get things from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe job specialties.
All right. Well, that's probably a good seg into the next half, which won't be a half on the episode. And that is prison as character. But as Chris was saying, we're also going to talk about the type of characters you'll find in the prison. So we'll start with that. And one of them is the Black Marketeer.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah. We've already talked about him, yeah.
Actually, something that's good to mention with that, and I think it was Wayne's point back in the Black Marketeers episode, that it's very unlikely money is going to be the currency that people are using. In modern prisons, I think cigarettes is one of the big things used for currency.
I thought it was sexual favors.
Is there money? I haven't been to prison, so.
I've never been to prison either, dude. Drugs? Drugs would be a currency.
Yeah.
It's both ways. Well, I mean, what is a currency? A currency can be anything that people want.
Mm-hmm.
You can make your own script, prison script.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bottle caps on the trash planet.
Everybody's rich.
I'm going to make it rain. Bottle caps cut me up.
Man, that guy's just rolling in bottle caps.
Yeah, the Black Market's here. Of course, the prison guards, and there's like different types. There's the, what you would call like the hard ass.
Mm.
The one that's by the book and you won't gotta watch out for. But then there's the ones that you can manipulate, and then there's also the ones you can trick.
Yeah.
And I think a nice mix of that would make it interesting for the players.
I think there's a different kind of manipulate. You know, because you have the prison guards who would be corrupt and, you know, out to make a profit, and then you could manipulate them through greed or possibly fear a little bit, you know, for exposing them. But then there's also the ones who essentially haven't been beaten down by the system. And again, this gets a little bit gray. Like, you could manipulate them because they're kind of naive or, you know,
sympathetic.
Sympathetic, or, as I said, like, if you're a hero and you're playing a heroic game, I don't really know if you could do that, but if you're playing a more like gray or kind of like gritty or realistic game, then I think that kind of becomes an option.
Well, manipulation, you can go with any direction at all. If you have the hard-ass guard who you're not going to be able to buy off or a trick or something like that, maybe he's an evil guy who likes beating up prisoners, make it look like another prisoner is insulting him or pissing him off, then he'll go beat up that prisoner for you.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of the key. You said if he's an evil guy, right? Where I was thinking more like the other prison guard is not evil, and the PCs
I was trying to add an additional type to the mix.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, the way I see it is manipulating. You're specifically taking advantage of this guy.
I agree.
Which kind of pushes you to gray, you know?
I think there's also, and you see a couple examples. One was in Oz when, like, Rick Fox, he's like a basketball player. Yeah, quite a stretch for Rick Fox. Do you know who Rick Fox is? No, you guys, the blank look I got, I was like, he played basketball.
All right.
Come on, Canada's own Rick Fox.
Oh, Canada. Don't usually put Canada basketball together, all right.
Yeah, well, you only invented the sport.
Yeah. Man, that must chafe, huh?
I'm not a fan of basketball, but
or Canada.
But he gets sent to Oz, and people admire him because they, you know, he's a professional athlete. And or you could have it really relate to the guy. Like, he's really intelligent, but he's normal. That's, you see that in Prison Break, where the doctor really connects with Michael because he's obviously a very intelligent person. Mm-hmm. And she's attractive, and he's also attractive. There's also that thing. And he's not HIV positive. That's probably another plus in prison.
He hasn't been trained to like men. I'm sure that's also a plus.
Anyway, he had a lot of pluses. So, yeah, you can relate to them or even admire them, and that can be used to, and if you're, Wayne was talking about in a heroic system, maybe you are that fallen hero. And that prison guard remembers, no, I don't care what you became. I remember the person at the last stand at Bainbridge, and you held off that army. So, you treat you special. And I think that is something, if you have players that might resent being put into the prison, especially if they are like heroic people and you want to try something different, is give them that bone. Mm-hmm. Is the person that is going to remember, yeah, I do remember that you killed that dragon. You know, I do remember that, you know, you fought that armada off, you know.
That could be like a motivation, you know, because a certain type of character would be, you know, like the fallen character would be, oh yeah, I remember who I was. Look at what I've become.
Right.
This person has reminded me of what I can be. So, you know what, mm-hmm. I'm going to try and be a better
That's a good point.
Yeah. Person yeah, that's a good and escape, you know. Of course, then you have the opposite where the person's like, I'm going to use that to my advantage, even though I haven't changed, you know?
Yeah. Or, you know, you could have the guard who admires the person for what he was, or the guard who hates him for what he is currently.
Yeah. And that could be a motivation, too, because they're always ridiculing them. Mm. A good example of that is The Longest Yard with Burt Reynolds, an excellent prison movie, by the way. And there's like this one line I always remember. It's like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Superstar, because he's like this ex-football player. And everybody's like, you had it all, and you threw it away. So everybody hates him, because he's in prison.
Right.
Because he had it all, and it's like...
It's a lot of motivation to escape.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. So we got the prison guard, or prison guards. But, of course, we also touched on people, like, as far as that sympathetic character, in Prison Break, it was a doctor.
Mm, yeah.
Also, mm-hmm. also the prison warden. So other characters are, and we've talked about it, of course, there's gangs. I mean, Escape from New York Island, gang. Mm-hmm. Prison Planet, Crematoria, gangs. So every gang's got a leader. Every gang's got members. Mm. Oh, they wouldn't be gangs. We call them individuals.
People.
You even go so far as like every gang has not an ideal, but some kind of idea.
An ideology.
Because otherwise, there'd only be one. You know, if everybody agreed, there'd only be one gang.
Yeah. And of course, it's a very hateful thing in real life. Because, you know, you have the Aryan Brotherhood. It's a massive gang. And I think the Crips and the Bloods have a huge prison population, probably, yeah.
Yeah, Latin Kings around Chicago was the big one.
Giving them an ideology gives them a face.
Mm.
If they're only like a gang because of self-protection, that's a little bit boring. And you really got to give them a face and a way to distinguish from the other gangs and a way to provide the players choices.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. You know.
That could be a really, like a wrench to throw at a player group. Well, A, you'd have to get the group in prison. It'd be a prison game. Mm. But then, as Chris said, it'd be a very political game where now you have all these choices, right? You're going to end up joining a gang because everybody does.
Yeah, you're going to get shivved otherwise.
Yeah, and not joining a gang means you stand out.
Right.
But
if maybe all of the gangs, you know, they're all in prison, they all probably have pretty reprehensible ideas. Which one are you going to go along with?
Kind of thought that went without saying, but okay, yeah. just to clarify the point. And yet, none of them are any really necessarily better or worse than the others. They're just different.
Yeah, this gang's really nice guys. They help orphans.
Yeah. The paladins.
Yeah.
Let's rumble.
They're fallen paladins? No, they've all been accused of crimes they didn't commit.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the A-team. Yes. Oh, maybe I'll escape with them. I'm just thinking about B.A. going, I pity the fool. It says no to me. It says no to my loving.
That's what you're going to say. It seems as a paladin.
Yeah. Another group is snitches.
Yeah, that's definitely a character. Sorry, Chris. Snitches is definitely a character group? I don't know. But definitely
a
character.
Oh,
it don't have to be
a group.
Type. Yeah.
Like, if you had a group of black marketeers.
Well, that's what got me thinking. I'm like, a group of snitches, they're going to last all of 5 seconds.
Yeah, right.
It's a group of snitches, you know? Everybody wants to kill them. You know?
Well, that's the thing. They could be, I don't know, I see them kind of as like these people who are probably protected by the guards, even if they don't deserve it. So they're kind of their own group. They have protection, even though they're only single people.
No, I think that's definitely a good point. Because, yeah, that's not a gang, but, yeah, there will be probably a group of prisoners who, yeah, are under protection by the guards, and I'm sure everybody else pretty much hates them, so.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's not do the cop-out, though. So we've talked about characters in the prison, but we also said we have that challenge on locales. We may abandon it soon. It becomes increasingly more difficult. Mm. Is prison as a character. And I was thinking of the movie Session 9, and I would just recommend people just watch that anyway.
Right.
Because it's an amazing movie. Its tagline is, fear is a place. And I think when you watch that movie, you can see how a place, sorry, a little setup, they are like a hazmat cleanup crew, and they're cleaning what's in the movie is Danvers State Hospital, like an old mental institution. So a prison, in a sense. And they're cleaning it up. But when you're watching it, you don't know how alive that place is.
Hmm.
Wayne mentioned something else, Event Horizon. It's a ship. It's a little bit different.
Right.
But, you know, kind of the combined. But if you're watching a movie and you don't know how much the place is alive and how much they're influencing things, that's really good. And if you can do that with your prison story, almost like how much is it influencing things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it forces you, not so much as like, I want them to think that the prison is haunted.
Right.
But what is that story, that movie doing to make you think that that prison is haunted or that place is haunted? And it's a lot to do with the atmospherics. You know, are the lights turning on and off at inopportune times or opportune times for things that can go wrong for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and play up those aspects of it, you know, make the characters feel claustrophobic, describe how small the places are that they're in, how little room they have to maneuver, you know?
Yeah.
Give it unsanitary things, if that fits the setting. Describe the smells, urine and blood.
Ugh. Now, you'd said before, Chris, certain Fate games say to build everything as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I could really see doing that with a prison. You know, you give the prison aspects to really kind of drive home that tone or that atmosphere or that mood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can see that working really well.
I think a lot of games have things in them. World of Darkness, Virtues and Vices. What's your prison's virtue? What's its vice?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, of course, you might not. I mean, it could be. You could even play with the ones they provide. Like, maybe its vice is greedy. Mm. What does that mean? Maybe it's greedy for blood or whatever.
Yeah, you saying that reminded me of Apocalypse World. I know you guys aren't really that big a fan of the game, but they have threats.
But I'll say I did like Monster Hunter.
Okay,
fair enough. Which is the same system.
Yeah, it's slightly different, but same system. But like in Apocalypse World, you have threats, and threats have an impulse. And an impulse is kind of something for the GM to look at during the story, and when something needs to happen, they say, oh, that's right, this is a prison, right? And its impulse is to deny egress, right? Or they have these moves, and you can look at them, and I thought it was really, really neat where you can just say, oh, that's what this thing is, and here are some things that can kind of happen in the story or in the fiction to reinforce that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just saying, oh, we're, you know, World of Darkness, give it a virtue or a vice. Okay, it's so the prison is greedy. Just kind of, if you give it a character,
yeah,
how does that character express itself in the structure, in the building?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was even, it's a little different, but I was also just thinking in general for a story is just because in Session 9 with its tagline, fear is a place, just like, give your story a tagline.
Hmm.
Regardless, it doesn't matter if it's a prison story or not. Just give your story a tagline.
My prison story tagline? You will not escape.
Yeah.
You are in a prison.
Well, I just said it doesn't have to be a prison story, but anyway.
In a world, that's a prison.
Yeah.
No, but I do agree, yeah. Tagline for all stories.
Well, that wraps up our second locales. First one was ships. Second one was prisons. Maybe we'll move on to a city next.
Maybe. You'll have to listen to find out.
Maybe. What's that?
I don't know. All right. Well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there on the website or download them off of DriveThruRPG or through Stitcher. Or you can even hook up for RSS feeds, as one of our listeners pointed out to us earlier this week, to get emails of when our newest episodes have come out. You can post comments on the episodes there. You can join us in the forums, follow us on Twitters, or see us on Facebook, or just send us an email, because we always love hearing from you. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.
Because the Idle Red Hands are a podcast. Okay, we've got to work on our tagline. All right.
Gold. So Chris's tagline is what? Evil laugh?
Exactly.
All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Take care.
Drive-Thru RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-Thru RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.
The Battletech, the Draconis Combine, they had the Legion of Venga.
You sure about that?